Second reading comes from the Gospel according to Luke. And we are in the sixth chapter now, beginning with the 17th verse. Jesus came down with the disciples and stood on a level place with a great crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea and Jerusalem, the coast of Tyre and Sidon. They'd come to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. Those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured, and all in the crowd were trying to touch him, for power came out from him and healed all of them. Then he looked up at his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you and when they exclude you, revile you, and defame you on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, for surely your reward is great in heaven, for that is what their ancestors did to the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you've received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, for you will be hungry. Woe to you who are laughing now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when all speak well of you, for that is what their ancestors did to the false prophets." In our hearing, our speaking, our living. So I saw another great church sign on my road trip on a back road. It was big, bold, capital letters so you couldn't miss it from a mile away. And it said, "Heaven or hell, the choice is yours." Very clean and sure, cut and dry, heaven or hell. And I'm thinking, well, it depends on how you define heaven and hell and who it is you think is going to be at each place. I wanted to knock on the door and say, "Could you elaborate a little bit? Add another sign so I can help understand this choice better as you defined it." Blessed are you. Woe to you. Sounds pretty cut and dry. I love the contrast in the part piece that you played so beautifully. It sounds a little disturbing. Luke's version of what in Matthew we call the Sermon on the Mount. And you notice we sung Matthew. It was Matthew's version in the hymn, right? And that's the one we usually teach children. It's actually in Luke a sermon on a level place. Unlike Matthew's version, there is an edge. Luke just puts it out there. Listen to it again in Eugene Peterson's adaptation, The Message, that version. "You're blessed when you've lost it all. God's kingdom is there for the finding. You're blessed when you're ravenously hungry. Then you're ready for the messianic meal. You're blessed when the tears flow freely. Joy comes with the morning. Count yourself blessed every time someone cuts you down or throws you out. Every time someone smears your name to discredit me. It means that the truth is too close for comfort and that the person is uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens, for even though they don't like it, I do. And know you're in good company. My preachers and witnesses have always been treated like this. But it's trouble ahead if you think you have it made. What you have is all you'll ever get. It's trouble ahead if you're satisfied with yourself. Yourself will not satisfy you for long. It's trouble ahead if you think life's all fun and games. There's suffering to be met and you're likely to meet it. There's trouble ahead when you live only for the approval of others, saying what flatters them, doing what indulges them, Popularity contests are not truth contests. Look how many scoundrel preachers were approved by your ancestors. Your task is to be true, not popular. Tough. So what are we to make of this? No matter how Jesus' words are translated, the message is challenging, right? Jesus is drawing on ancient Hebrew traditions. These words are not necessarily new. You heard some of it reflected in the reading from Jeremiah. And he's once again echoing his own mother's words when she sang before he was born. Jesus spells out great reversals, though, that would have sounded shocking and even absurd at the time. Everybody knew if you were poor, if you suffered great misfortunes, then clearly God was punishing you for something. You brought the shame on yourself. And it was evident to everyone that the wealthy surely were God's favorites, blessed because they deserved it. And Jesus is turning that all on its head. The poor are blessed. God's in their corner. The well-to-do and powerful will find themselves doing without. The rich are sent empty away, Mary sang in the Magnificat. Just in the past few months, I've talked with people who live in fear of losing benefits. They avoid doctor visits in order to save money, and then the disability folks threaten to reduce their disability because they're not going to the doctor often enough. I know people who have to take medicines for high blood pressure in part because they cannot afford fresh food and don't live anywhere near a grocery store. Beth Mulberry knows all too well about all of this. There are 100 different ways our society punishes the poor. And just about any of those folks I've talked to will say that the worst that they face is the stigma, the way they're talked down to at government offices and sometimes in houses of worship, the way they're characterized by politicians, the way they're treated as indispensable. Many of us are uncomfortable around people living with persistent poverty. I don't know who it was that said it, but someone said that the people who make $700 an hour have convinced the people who make $25 an hour that the people who make $7.25 are the problem. The great theologian Gustavo Gutierrez says, God has a preferential love for the poor, not because they are necessarily better than others, morally or religiously, but simply because they are poor and living in an inhuman situation that is contrary to God's will. God gave ancient Israel laws about how the poor are to be treated. Jesus takes it and amplifies that and says to the crowd that ultimately roles will be reversed and God will set things right and indeed is at work doing that already. Many years ago, a college professor of mine shared the story of having been visited by Will Campbell. Some of you know that name. Will Campbell was a kind of an itinerant preacher and writer and rabble-rouser and an ornery figure and did a lot of good holy stirring up of trouble in his day. Well, he and the professor were acquaintances. They knew each other. So when Campbell came to speak at Furman, the professor said, why don't you stay at my house? So he did. He walks into the professor's house, looks around and said, what are you doing living in this place of plunder? How's that for nice to see you again? And they laughed some and they talked, but it stayed with my friend, the professor. He didn't end up selling that house, but he did end up starting to notice there were people living in abject poverty just a few blocks away. He began getting students involved and trying to make a difference in those lives. There are times when I'm in the blessings column, times when I'm grieving the loss of a family member or someone here or something that's happening around us. There are times I find myself attacked for taking a stand I believe is in keeping with the gospel. I grew up in a family with very few resources, but most of the time I'm in that woes column. I have more than I need. We never went hungry as children, and I certainly never worry where my next meal is coming from now. Hardly any of us would consider ourselves wealthy, but compared to the vast majority of the world's population, we are. So where's the blessing in all this? Where's the good news? Where's the reason for rejoicing for us? Because I think most of us at time are in one, could be in one side or the other. I find good news in Jesus offering us a different way of seeing the world and seeing one another. There's a certain freedom that comes from letting go of the belief that we are just one purchase away from having it all. Kate Huey said, we might come to understand the difference between God's abundance and our excess. I wonder if it's part of the reason for the popularity of Marie Kondo right now. People realizing just having way too much stuff does not make you happier. I find good news, as odd as it sounds, in the discomfort Jesus' words bring. Nothing ever changes if everybody's comfortable with how things are. There is such a thing as holy discomfort. So maybe Jesus wants us to squirm a little bit, to wrestle with this, to stop and ask, how am I using my wealth, my resources, my access to things and to people? What am I taking for granted? And when we can do that without feeling threatened or feeling defensive, it can bring about a lot of joy and peace. Jesus, after all, wanted everyone to live into full humanity that God created them for, poor and rich, joyful and sad. I can't be fully human if I deny the full humanity of anyone else, whether the poor, the marginalized, or those I disagree with, or those I envy as seeming to have it all. I find good news, blessing, in the fact that Jesus went to a level place, an accessible place, a place that people came from far and wide, all walks of people, and he healed all of them, all of them. He didn't stop and ask each one what their level of income was, what type of insurance they carried, did they have too much stuff in their closet back home. He just healed them, loved them. And so it is with us. I find good news that in order for everybody to find blessing, honor, we need each other. I cannot be truly blessed, cannot find complete joy, unless the person living down the road with nothing has access to the blessings and the joy. A level place is what is created when Jesus is present. I find good news in the thought that if Jesus were here today, he might offer some additional blessings and woes. Woe to those who declare a national emergency when there isn't one. Woe to those who make life harder for the poor. Woe to those who hide behind a Christian facade to justify marginalizing others. You notice I want Jesus to bestow woe on certain people. In which case, I also have to be open to hearing, woe unto you when you think you're better, when your righteous anger turns into self-righteousness. And I hear him saying, blessed are you who keep trying, even when it's tempting to give up. Blessed are you who open your minds and hearts to new ways of seeing the world and its people. Blessed are you who stop each day and notice the flower growing in the crack of the sidewalk. Blessed are you who use your skills and your time and your money to bless somebody else. Blessed are you if you're struggling now. It won't always be this way. Blessed are you if you're grieving now, as hard as it is. Jesus holds you in his heart. Blessings to all of us who are sometimes deserving of woe, but who nevertheless receive grace. That is the very heart of God, and it is poured out on all of us, rich and poor alike. We do indeed have reasons to rejoice. Amen.